ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते
So we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 14, The Forest of Enjoyment. I remember the first time I read this part of the Bhagavatam. Verse 20. So this is prose. Sa eva punar nidraga nidra jagara grihito Netamasi magna shunya aranya ivashete nanyat kinchana veda shava ivapa vidaha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Saha, that conditioned soul. Eva, certainly. Punaha, again. Nidra ajagara, by the python of deep sleep. Grihita, being devoured. Andhe, in deep darkness. Tamasi, in ignorance. Magnaha, being absorbed. Shunyaranye, in the isolated forest. Eva, like. Shete, he lies down. Na, not. Anyat, else. Kinshana, anything. Veda, knows. Shava, a dead body. Hiva, life. Apavida, thrown away. Sukadeva Goswami continued speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. My dear king, sleep is exactly like a python. Those who wander in the forest of material life are always devoured by the python of sleep. Being bitten by this python, they always remain in the darkness of ignorance. They are like dead bodies thrown in a distant forest. Thus, the conditioned soul cannot understand what is going on in life. So this is a picture of the material world. Purport. Material life means being fully absorbed in eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Out of these, sleep is taken very seriously. While asleep, one completely forgets the object of life and what to do. For spiritual realization, one should try to avoid sleep as much as possible. The Goswamis of Vrindavan practically did not sleep at all. Of course, they slept some, for the body requires sleep, but they slept only about 2 hours, and sometimes not even that. They always engaged in spiritual cultivation, nidrahara viharakadi vijita. Following in the footsteps of the Goswami, we should try to reduce sleeping, eating, matting and defending. Om Agyanati Miram Dasya Yanam Janam Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tesmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mahyam Dharati Svapadam Tikam Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Goradvishe Namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Vanshakalpataruvyascha Kipasindubhyayevacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Mukam Karuti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatkripam Tamaham Vande Shiguru Dinataranam.
So this is serious subject. Normally we don't speak so much this subject among devotees. Huh? I was saying that normally this subject, the devotees, they don't very much like to speak about, because this is about the situation of the material world and how the material world is a bad place and how actually we are in a very bad situation. We like to think that everything is okay, everything is going on nicely. After all, this material world is not such a problem. We can manage it by having some kind of religious life. We can balance it, because religious life balances the material world and enable us to go through the life, material life, while enjoying and not too much suffering, managing to enjoy somehow something and not too much suffering. But the Bhagavatas, the devotees who are really situated in transcendence, they like to pinch us in order to awaken us from our situation. And sometimes they enter into the subject, you know, directly. And they use strong words. Sukadev Goswami is quite a strong speaker. Huh? Sometimes he's making some allegories or metaphor who are very straightforward. This is one of the qualities of a Vaishnava, one of the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava. He is a straightforward. That means he is saying the truth. If he sees there is a problem, he tells it. Prabhupada was also very straightforward, how he was addressing the material civilization and the modern civilization, material life, was very straightforward. But his mood is mainly coming from Shukadev Goswami. So here Shukadev Goswami comparing sleep like a python who devours the conditioned soul. And when we become devoured by this python, we remain in the darkness of ignorance, like dead bodies. Yeah, that's we become completely absorbed in ignorance when sleep comes. And we cannot avoid sleep. Every day it will come and bite us, no? Even if we try, sometime we try, or today I will not sleep, but we may do it for one day maximum. And even next day will be difficult. But today we will not be able to sleep, not sleep. Sleep will come and like devour us once again. And when we will be
Here Prabhupada says, beaten by a python. But the python is not biting, he's swallowing, no? Python. When we will be in the belly of that python, then we will forget everything. In the belly of deep sleep. So, Prabhupada writes here, out of these, sleep is taken very seriously. While asleep, one completely forgets the object of life and what to do. Normally sleeping, everybody likes. In this material world, everybody likes sleeping. Because it's, you know, you put yourself in the bed, you feel nice, comfortable, warm, no more things to do. We appreciate this. How we appreciate this? Because we have a taste for a tamaguna. We have some appreciation within us for tamaguna. But the great soul, they have no taste for this. Prabhupada, before going to sleep, Sruta Kirti Prabhu said that always before going to sleep, Prabhupada would say, now I'm going to waste my time. He didn't enjoy at all sleeping. Now I'm going to waste my time. It was like something he didn't like to do. He was forced to do it by the necessity of the material body. But he didn't like to do that because when one becomes more spiritually enlightened, he experiences a higher happiness. And when sleep comes, he loses that experience. Then he has to go into lower consciousness, you know. Of course, this is not the case for Prabhupada, but he is teaching us. Yes, good, thank you. The great souls, like Prabhupada, even when they sleep, actually, they don't come under the mode of ignorance. They remain in transcendence. So they dream about Krishna. There is no change for them, but because they are teaching us, they know that when we sleep, we enter into the mode of ignorance. And we forget the object of life and what to do. And a lot of time of our existence is spent in sleeping. It's a lot. So Prabhupada said, you see, one should try to avoid sleep as much as possible. When Prabhupada was in Montreal, actually, in 1968, near the McGill University, Amsaduta was appointed by the devotees to sleep next to Prabhupada. So he was in the same room of Prabhupada, and there was a curtain between him and Prabhupada. And he was so much excited during the first night that he could not sleep at all. Because, you know, Prabhupada was there and he was thinking, always he was thinking, Prabhupada is just here. He could not sleep. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, Prabhupada woke up and start chanting his japa. And he was thinking, should I wake up also, or should I remain pretending that I am sleeping? But he was too shy to wake up also, so he remained pretending he is sleeping. And the next day, again he could not sleep. Too much. Stress, anxiety, Prabhupada was dead just near to him. He could not sleep again the next day. And when Prabhupada woke up very early, 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, that time he decided, okay, I will also wake up. So he also turned on the light and start chanting Prabhupada. So he would say, oh, you are already awakened? He said, yes, Prabhupada, I cannot sleep. Prabhupada told him, oh, that's good. That's very good. Then Prabhupada told him, actually, our movement means, our goal means eating zero, sleeping zero, matting zero, and defending zero. This is our goal. But we don't say this to the people, otherwise they will not appreciate us. But this is our goal. These words were spoken here in Montreal. So, topic is again coming this morning. Prabhupada is saying to us, one should try to avoid sleep as much as possible. Of course, this as much as possible means we have to consider what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, that one who sleeps too much or who doesn't sleep enough, or one who eats too much or doesn't eat enough, cannot practice yoga. So we have to find a balance that will keep us in the mode of sattva-guna, because in that platform of sattva-guna, then the practice of spiritual life will become more easier. In the 11th canto, Krishna said to Arjuna, actually, first one should rise to the platform of sattva-guna, then from that platform he should rise to the platform of Shuddha-sattva, or Nirguna, transcendental life. But first we have to rise to the platform of sattva-guna, because when we are too much under the modes of passion and ignorance, it's very difficult to practice spiritual life, to focus really on Krishna and to connect with the spiritual energy. So this is what Prabhupada said by as much as possible. He didn't say one should try to avoid sleep completely. He said as much as possible. So possible means what is possible for us to keep our balance. Because if we avoid, sleep too little, and then after we are sleepy during the day, then we will remain even more in the mode of ignorance constantly. You know, it happens sometimes we are really tired because we don't sleep enough, and finally we are even more in the mode of ignorance because we remain entire day in tamaguna. So we have to find this balance. The balance will be different according to every individual because of our different bodies, you know. We have different bodies affected by different modes, and different doshas according to Ayurveda, and all this will do that. We will find our own balance. But the goal that Prabhupada is also explaining here is that we should try to reduce this to maximum. Why? Because these activities, eating, sleeping, matching and defending, they root, we can say, they root us in the material energy and in the material conception of life. The more we practice these activities, the more we become deeply rooted in the material energy. So we have to engage these activities in the service of Krishna, eating Krishna prasad, sleeping for Krishna, having Krishna conscious children, and defending the devotees, for example, or preaching. Preaching can also be some aspect of defending, you know, because we are defending Krishna. So we can engage these activities in order to spiritualize them. But after some time, our progress is supposed to lead us to a platform then we will not enjoy anymore to do these activities. we will enjoy tasting the prasadam of Krishna, but the fact of eating and filling our belly will not bring us really deep satisfaction. You know? Materialistic people, the feeling to have the belly completely full is one of their very nice experience. You know, when belly is about to crack. This is one of their very nice experience, because they have no experience higher than this. But we know that when we eat the prasadam, we experience something else. So much happiness is coming also inside. No? I have seen so many times at the end of the prasad, everybody is fully joyful in the prasadam room. No? The devotee, they become fully joyful. Because this is the effect of the spiritual energy. So, but the activities in themselves, I mean the material as part of the activity, will lose its interest, like sleeping. After practicing the service of Krishna, we will find happiness in remembering Krishna during the day also, thinking about Krishna and being and experiencing actually the presence of Krishna. But when we have to go to sleep, that experience will become less, except on some fortunate night when we can make some spiritual dreams. And when we will progress, this will also occur more and more. But normally a Vaishnava doesn't like everything which comes to hinder his connection with Krishna. He likes to remain always connected to Krishna 24 hours a day. So when sleep comes, he knows, oh, now my connection will be like interrupted or lessened, we can say, for some time. He doesn't want this. He would like to remain, you know, always feeling Krishna. Because when we feel Krishna, we feel happiness, we feel love, we feel compassion, we experience something beautiful. So we don't want this to be interrupted. When we're looking at the deities, sometimes we could stay hours in front of them. No? Everybody has experience. Sometimes some special day we come, we look at the deities and we cannot move. Sometimes we may stay 1 hour looking at the deities. Yeah, it happens in everybody's life. Because our heart, our soul become pacified. Because this is the purpose of life, is to have exchange with Krishna. Krishna being the source of unlimited eternity, knowledge and bliss. So when our senses enter in contact with Him, they become fully satisfied and even more overwhelmed by happiness and love. So this is the way actually to go beyond eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Prabhupada here is giving the example of the Goswamis of Vrindavan. Nidrahara vihara kali vijitao. So how they became controllers of their senses, and they gave up practically eating, sleeping, mating completely and defending. How they came to that stage of life? Because they were experiencing something higher. By following this, actually I don't remember exactly the entire Sanskrit verse of Srinivasacharya, but the meaning is that by engaging themselves in the process of devotion and service and becoming fully absorbed in that process, then they obtain victory. How we say? Victory on
something?
Over.
Yeah, they obtain victory on sleeping, on sleep, eating, mating and defending. But only because they got some higher experience. Their senses were always in the contact of Krishna. This is why they are called Goswami. Goswami means one who is controlling his senses, no? Vacho vegam manasakro davegam divo vegam udarupasta vegam. This is definition of a Goswami, who can control the urge of speech, vacho, manasa, the mind, krodha, the anger, is controlling this yod. And jiva, tongue, udara, belly, upasta, genitals, who can control all these six kind of yod, he is a Goswami. And he can have disciple all over the earth. Prithivesa, sisha. So why does this mean to control all these senses? How can we control? It's impossible. Because we cannot control material energy, no? The senses, they are product of material energy. But the jiva cannot control the material energy. We are conditioned soul, so the material energy is controlling us. Actually, the senses are controlling us, no? We are go-dasa. We are servant of the senses. If they want us to do something, we have no power to refuse. Because you know, when the senses, they really want you to do something, they are very powerful. They can oblige you to do whatever they want you to do, no? This is Maya. The power of Maya is, how Krishna said, Devi esha gunamayi mama maya durattaya. Durattaya is a very powerful, extremely difficult to overcome. Even the greatest yogi, they cannot overcome this maya. It's impossible, actually. Krishna said, very difficult, but when Krishna said very difficult, we can take it as meaning impossible. At our level, it's impossible. So how can we become Goswami? Goswami, how can we control our senses? It's not possible. So what is a Goswami? A Goswami is someone whose senses are controlled by Krishna. They are no more controlled by material energy, they are controlled by Krishna. Because Krishna is the Rishikesha, the master of the senses. So only he can free us from the control of our senses. Only if Krishna accepts to control our senses, then our senses will not be any more controlled by the material energy, no? Because he is the master. He has that potency to control our senses. So Goswami means actually someone whose senses are controlled by Krishna. Not really someone who controls his senses. It's true, but it's not really he who is controlling. It's Krishna who is controlling his senses. So whose senses Krishna will control? Krishna will control the senses to the person who offers him his senses. No? So this is the process of Bhakti Yoga. We learn how to offer our senses to Krishna. No? We offer our eyes to Krishna. We focus that now we will use all our senses for His pleasure. This is our offering our senses for Krishna. We will not try to utilize our eyes to enjoy the forms and shapes and colors of this world, but we will offer Him our eyes to look at His deity form. Then this is an offering. Offering our eyes.
Offerings means giving, and this is an act of love. We are doing for His pleasure. We will offer our ears to Krishna, to hear about Him, to... Yeah, mainly hear. With the ears we can only hear. We will offer our... Yes? Me? So, this is what I am doing. Spiritual cultivation means bhakti yoga. When we say spiritual cultivation means learning, for us means learning, for them means doing, the fact to offer our senses to Krishna. This is the definition of what we are doing. We are doing bhakti yoga, no? So bhakti yoga means Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Yoga Uchate. This is definition of Bhakti Yoga. Of engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses. This is called Bhakti Yoga. So our yoga is this. The other process of yoga, Astanga Yoga, they are withdrawing the senses from the material energy, focusing the senses within. This is called Pratyahara. You know? After pranayama, there is a pratyahara, withdrawing the senses. But we are not doing that. We are engaging our senses into the service of Rishikesha, the master of the senses. This is an act of offering, bhakti, devotion, you know. And by doing so, Sarvopadi vinir muktam tat paridvena nirmanam. Our heart will become purified and all our false designation, false identity will become removed. Tat paridvena nirmanam will become completely pure, because when we engage our senses in the service of Krishna, the soul awaken. What is really inside the soul awakens, because we are coming in contact with the object of our spiritual senses. So our spiritual senses awaken. This is Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunai. The pure love for Krishna is there within the heart of everyone. There is no need to search it somewhere else. It is already here. Sadhya Kabu Nai means there is no need to go and search it. It is there eternally. Shravanadi Sudachite. We just have to hear and practice this service. Shravan means offering our ears to Krishna. Adi means and everything else. Offering our eyes to Krishna. Offering our sense of touch to Krishna. By dressing Him or by serving Him, our tongue to Krishna, our sense of smell to Krishna, all this we offer to Krishna. 10 senses, 5 karmendriyani, 5 gyanindriyani, 5 senses for acquiring the knowledge, 5 senses of action. All these senses, then the mind also, which is considered the 11th sense, we engage in the service of Krishna. And by doing so, Shravanadi Sudachite, our heart will become pure, Karaye Udai, and this love will arise in the heart. That means the soul will thrive, the soul will unfold. It's like lotus, you know. We have a treasure within our heart, but now that treasure is locked. It's like a lotus flower which is closed. But by engaging our senses in the service of Krishna,
that treasure will unfold, will open, will manifest. It is there already. We don't have to become someone else. We are already what we have, but we have to become what we have. Actually, we are not what we are presently. We are what, how to say, we are covered by something and we identify ourselves with this, thinking, oh, I am this, I am that. Like craziness. Crazy person thinks he is Napoleon Bonaparte, or yeah, crazy person thinks they are this person, this Jeanne d'Arc. You know Jeanne d'Arc? Jeanne d'Arc in France, this is one. Once I was giving a lecture in France and one lady came and she was so much interested in Krishna and all this. She started coming every morning and she said, oh, your philosophy is so nice, I was waiting for this so many years and I like so much, I want to become like you. I was amazed, it's not so often we meet some people like that. But after a few days, she revealed to me that actually she was the reincarnation of Jeanne d'Arc. Then I understood, oh, okay. So that is some crazy people always, they're thinking, she's Jeanne d'Arc, okay. Then I was thinking, oh, now what to do? What to do, you know? She is the reincarnation. Yes, of Krishna. You know, Jeanne d'Arc was a devotee, so you can continue. So, but it's funny, but we are more or less in the same case because we are thinking, I am this, I am a man, I am a woman, I am this and that, but we are not this. We are also, if we knew really who we are, maybe we would laugh that we are identifying with this, you know. This material body is really strange. Sometimes I look my face in the mirror and I'm thinking, wow, Krishna really gave me a strange body. It's strange, you know. Sometimes, you know, the shape of our body is quite strange. Not very beautiful. It's quite strange, no? And the body is also reacting in very strange ways. So it's very strange, this material body. But what to do? It's there. So engage it. Like Prabhupada would say, do the good use of a bargain.
Bad bargain,
yeah. We have to do the good use of a bad bargain. We have something which is really not great, but do whatever we can with this. So, by engaging our senses like this, we become purified. And actually, who we are really within the soul will awaken. Jiv Jago. Jiv Jago. The Jiv means the soul will awaken. Jago means our spiritual senses will start to unfold. Our heart will become enlivened. Because this katha, these topics about Krishna, or the fact to engage our senses in Krishna's service is very powerful. Tapta Jivanam, this is giving life, you know, bringing life within our heart. And it's like we were in a deep sleep, but now we open our eyes. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyanam Janam Shalakya. Our eyes open, so we perceive something different. We can start to perceive the divine energy. This is that paridvaira nirmanam. This is gradual, but this is our process, engaging the senses in the service of Krishna. Then the senses will start gradually to perceive more and more the spiritual energy. In the beginning we may not see the spiritual energy, but after some time it is supposed that our senses, they will start to perceive more and more the spiritual energy. So we will become more and more happy. We will experience more and more love. This is what it's supposed to be. We're supposed to love more, because actually spiritual energy is nothing but love. So experiencing spiritual energy means experiencing love. Sometimes we say bliss, but bliss actually is just an aspect of love, because there cannot be bliss without love. Because love is blissful, we say the bliss. Spiritual energy is blissful, or ananda, you know, we translate this word ananda by bliss, but ananda actually means love. Blissful love, because love is blissful by nature, and the absence of ananda or the absence of love is what we call suffering. When ananda disappears, we say, I'm suffering. But if you make some pain, or you give some pain to someone who is established in love, he doesn't mind. He's not suffering. He just feels something, but that doesn't disturb him. Like Jesus, you know, when they were whipping him, or they pierced even him, like here, you know, with a, how would you say?
Spear.
Spear, yeah, like spear, like this. He was not suffering, because he was really, really establishing deep love. He just said, oh, please forgive them, they don't know what they are doing. Haridas Thakur was not suffering, they were whipping him. So 21 marketplace, he was not suffering. He was in full peace. He had smile. Maybe he was feeling something. He was feeling something, but internally his experience of love was so deep that it was higher than this. So this is the why the Goswami, they were living like that. Krishna kirtana gana, Krishna kirtana gana nartimi prima mritam bonidhi. By chanting the name of Krishna constantly and engaging all their life in the service of Krishna, they were like swimming in an ocean of ecstasy. Constantly, 24 hours a day. The same thing for Prabhupada. If you're looking Prabhupada's video, with this vision you will see how much actually Prabhupada is always experiencing such a deep ocean of ecstasy, you know. He's always in bliss completely. He's trying not to manifest this so much, but we can see. This is the nature of a realized soul, that he is living in unlimited ecstasy, which is unlimited love. That's why you cannot disturb him, because whatever you can do to him is very little to compare to what he is constantly experiencing, you know. Some unlimited feeling are going through the heart constantly. It's like transported by unlimited love. So if I come and I slap him, he doesn't mind. This is why the Goswami, at this level, sleeping becomes really secondary. Eating, all these things, I mean on the material level, they have no interest, because there is experience within the heart which is more satisfying. Bhakti is like this, it satisfies the soul. Like when we are eating, it satisfies the belly. So when we are serving Krishna, it satisfies the heart. By engaging our senses in the service of Krishna, when our senses connect with Krishna, they become purified, and that experience is blissful. When we see the deity, no? When our eyes touch the form of the deity, this is a pleasant experience. No? We see, oh, we see the beauty of the form, we see the sweet, we feel some sweetness in our heart, no? We feel how they are sweet. And in the same way, when our tongue touches the taste of the prasadam, we feel sweetness also. Not only in our tongue, but in our heart also. Sometimes, you know, when you take prasad, your heart becomes very touched by taking prasad. 2 days ago this happened to me. I was in Union Square in New York. We were chanting in the Harinam, so one Prabhu came from India. I mean, he's living there, but he's an Indian. And he brought some prasadam, for some kachori for all the devotees. One bag, his wife has cooked these kachoris. So it was...
Kachori?
Kachori, yeah. In the late afternoon. That means you want one? I was not really angry, but I say, yeah, okay. For, you know, this is exchange of love, dadati pratigrinati. Prabhu is bringing this kachori, his wife was cooking, thinking to send to the devotees, the Haridam. So I say, okay, give me one. I took one and I ate it, but when I ate it, I felt my heart became completely purified. You know, kachori is nothing, that will not change nothing in how much you are hungry or that. This is small kachori, but I felt my heart changed completely just by eating that kachori. And after, I was feeling full of bliss. I was really feeling it. My consciousness completely changed, and the chanting became very nice, just because she was cooking with love, and Krishna accepted, so it becomes prasadam. And it has power to touch the heart. So the same thing with the topics when we hear about Krishna also. It comes down, enter our ears and touch our heart. And when we chant the holy name, if we chant properly, it will also transform our heart. Every day the holy name should transform our heart. No? We should have some experience like this. That when we are finished to chant, our heart has not changed since when we started, and that means we're not chanting properly. Normally our heart must change. We must experience something also. Oh, so beautiful. And actually if we chant properly, we will become amazed how the holy name has the power to completely change the heart in a very short time. Then once our heart is transformed, then we are carried only by the sweetness of the holy name. Prabhupada said the chanting of the holy name is supposed to enact a transformation in the heart. And if this does not happen, that means one is not doing it properly. So we have to try. How does it mean we are not doing it properly? Doing it properly means doing it as an offering to Krishna. We are not chanting the holy name for us, but we are chanting to please Him. This is bhakti. Otherwise it's not bhakti. Bhakti means I'm chanting for your pleasure. This is a very important point while chanting. If we chant for Him as an offering from our heart, I'm chanting for your pleasure. To express you my gratitude, to express you my love. Yes? Yeah? Yeah? We can say? Why not? We can say. It's like, because I love you, I will change your name 25,000 times every day. This is beautiful, no? Sometimes when the people, they ask me, oh, why you are obliged to chant 16 rounds every day? You know, you have to make this vow and after you're obliged. I don't want to be obliged. I want my connection with God is free, based on freedom. I told them, no, you don't understand. We are not obliged. We just tell Him because I love you, I will change your name 25,000 times every day. This is not obligation. This is a vow. This is love. This is not obligation. If I don't want, I'm not obliged. Nobody obliged me, but I want. I do it because I want. This is really... We can say this. At the same time, we are also aware that our love is not so great. Even Mahaprabhu would say himself that I have not even one drop of love for Krishna. But the two feelings can be, you know, in bhakti that we are tossed in the waves. Sometimes we feel love for Krishna. Sometimes we feel, oh, I have no love for you. But this is different aspect of love. The nature of real love is that is the real love makes us think that we don't have love. Nevertheless, at some time we also feel love. Like Mahaprabhu would also sometime feel unlimited love for Krishna. But when this love becomes introspective, he thinks, oh, I have no love. This is the nature of. So we should try to follow in the footsteps of the Goswami and offer all our senses like this for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. This is called Tava Iva Asmi. I am yours. My manasa deho geho yukichuha arpilutu apade nandakishore. Whatever I have, my mind, my senses, my body, deho means body, so means senses, all my possession and everything else, yukichuha, I offer this at your lotus feet, O beautiful son of Nanda. This is bhakti. And by doing this offering of our old senses, I will offer my eyes to see you. I will offer my ears to hear about you or to hear your holy name. I will offer my tongue to taste only the remnants of your food. I will offer my nose to smell the fragrance of the flowers offered to you or of your body, pujarikan. You know, we put some oil on the deity. So when we are dressing the deity, actually we can smell the Krishna's nice smell. We can smell the body of Krishna. Or I will engage my, what is more, sense of touch. To touch your body or touch the body of your devotees. My hands and feet to serve you. My tongue to change your name and speak about you. This is love, fully absorbed because of love. And in this way I will, love means sacrifice, means offering. In this way I will offer all my senses and my soul, because the soul must be offered also, the mind also. First we offer all the senses. No? Then second level, we have to learn how to offer the mind. That means we have to think also always about Krishna. And that's more difficult. But it will come. Normally if we practice properly at some point, the remembrance of Krishna will become more and more living in our mind during the day. Then we can think about Krishna constantly. This is called... Yes?
Can I ask a question?
Yes?
Unless you want to finish what you were saying.
No, tell.
Like, if we offer something external, let's say, like, for example, you could be brahmachari, means you give your life, so on. But it's outside, like, this is just outside. So, is it possible that someone externally is like a karmi, but that like you're saying, he's offered everything to the Lord?
Yeah, of course.
Or like, is how much is this a criteria to see how much outside externally the person? How does that?
It's very difficult because actually like Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was living in full opulence. Externally he looked like materialist, completely. He had, you know, his hairs were with some nice fragrant oils. He was wearing silken clothes with so much embroidery. But internally he was fully absorbed in Krishna. So actually all his senses were engaged in Krishna, because inside the mind all the senses are rooted inside the mind. So if the mind is engaged, actually it's considered everything is engaged. Even if externally it's not following, no problem. If the mind is engaged, it's enough.
Why is the accent so much put on this in our society?
Why?
Is the accent put so much on this, on following?
Externally? Because the fact to engage our senses externally will help us to engage our mind.
So it's just a help, but
yeah, it's
it doesn't really influence our surrender, what we give.
That is the first step. It will influence, of course, but if we remain only there, that will not be enough. After, we have to offer also our thought to Krishna, because that's what Krishna wants. And ultimately Krishna wants not only our mind, but he wants our heart. Then after we have to offer our heart to Krishna, that means our life, our soul.
But I guess my question was, can you do this without going to this step? Like someone just surrenders fully to Krishna, but you didn't go through the process of doing external. Or do we have to do it?
That means if he is able to do, if someone would be able to, without engaging his external life in the service of Krishna, just engaging his mind in Krishna, and externally remain doing normal activities, you mean? That's possible. That means that this person would have already practiced in past life. Then maybe it can do so. But normally one whose mind is absorbed in Krishna will also absorb his external senses in Krishna. He will not eat what is not prasadam. Even though Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that for one who has developed real taste for the holy name, whatever he enters into his mouth will never change his heart or consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said this. That cannot touch him anymore. But still, normally what we do with our mind, we also do with our body. The body follows the mind normally. Yeah? So it's possible. Theoretically it's possible, and it happens, and sometimes, like, this, there is also what we call the avaduta. You know, avaduta externally, they are following no rules. Like Vamsidas Babaji. You know Vamsidas Babaji? At the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Vamsidas Babaji had no tilak. He would not take baths every day. You know, he had very long hairs, matted hairs. And he would follow no rules and regulation, nothing. He had just his deity of Gornitai. And he would cook for them something and offer them some bowls. But he would follow no rules. One day he didn't find the bowls to offer them prasadam. And he told them, if you don't bring back your bowls, then no prasad today. So first you bring back your bowls, then I give you. So that was his relay. He was following nothing. But internally he was fully absorbed. We cannot imitate that, but it's possible. That would be, you know, a high level of devotion. Who is already, whose mind is absorbed in Krishna, that means he is on the platform of Raga, Raganuga Bhakti. His mind is becoming completely absorbed in Krishna. That means he is able entire day to think only about Krishna. Normally we have to go through the first through engaging our external body, our external senses in Krishna, and tat paridvena nirmalam, our senses become purified and the soul awaken, our love develops. Because thinking about Krishna all day means you need to love him. This is a question of love. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. Manmana, think always about me. So how you cannot think about something you don't love continuously? But when you love something, naturally your thoughts are just flowing toward that, the object of your love, without making any effort, no? Everybody knows that. Even in the material plane, this is real. When we have some attachment for something, for our children, or wife, or friend, or something, our parents, you know, our soul directly go. When a young girl falls in love with a young man, or a young man falls in love with a young girl, they will think about each other constantly, you know, day and night. Whatever they're doing, they're in their home, but they're eating, but they're thinking about their beloved. This is what Mahaprabhu told to Rupa and Sanatana. He sent them this letter, and he told them, when a young boy or a young girl, they fall in love, they think constantly about each other. So in the same way, we have to practice that we will be thinking constantly about Krishna. Even though externally we may be working as a doctor or as a, I don't know, whatever job we may do, bus driver, but we can, like Jayananda, you know, he was driving taxi, but he was really pure at heart. He was driving taxi, but his consciousness was not in the streets of San Francisco. His consciousness was thinking about Krishna. The proof is that what he was doing after driving taxi and all the rest of his life. So we can say at this time, you know, Jayananda was just driving. But when the consciousness is engaged, whatever you do actually becomes engaged, even if it looks ordinary activity. When the mind is engaged, then naturally everything follows. If that can answer to your question. Okay? Thank you very much. Shishi Gornitai Ki Jai.